harshly to his wife. He didn't build her up. He talked her down. And the wife, on the other hand, too, was not respectful of her husband, didn't trust him, didn't, you know, and he was making the point that, you know, if we are saying to our kids, yes, God is real, you know, the church is important, these things, you know, and in our homes, our biggest audience is our kids. And if we don't respond to one another out of the heart of the gospel, our kids will never believe that. It's hypocritical. And he was just, one of the lines in here he said about that is, the message that our marriage preaches either repels or attracts our children. God wants your child to watch your marriage and think, I want a marriage like that, and I want the God that produced it. Or, when I think of the beauty of the gospel, I think of my parents' marriage. I want to be a part of the church that is loved by God the way my dad loves my mother. I want to be a part of the church that finds joy in submitting to Christ as my mother joyfully submits to my father. And I just thought it was really powerful because, again, like we talked about in the Garden of Evil, or Eden, whatever you want to call it, Satan is always trying to deceive us to be out of order and not respond to God's authority. You know, and I think in our marriages, this is one area. As a wife, I know that sometimes it's hard to submit to my husband or, you know, allow him to be in the spot that God has called him to be because maybe he makes mistakes and he's a sinner. But it's the same way if we can learn to, you know, I can submit to my husband out of obedience to Christ because that's what God called me to, whether he's perfect or not. It just speaks loudly about the gospel to our kids. And I think that we just have to be mindful. Are we portraying the gospel to our kids in the way our marriages are in our house? As wives, are we submitting to our husbands? As husbands, are we leading our wives well? Are we speaking and lifting her up, building her up? And I just think it's really powerful. I grew up in a family where my father would teach me a lot about God, but his life and marriage did not reflect the gospel. And it's confusing to kids. And it is hypocritical. You're saying one thing but doing another, that you're not living it out. If you can't live it out with your spouse, it's obviously probably not really affected our hearts in the way it should. So that's just the challenge. When you guys go home and you're thinking about raising your kids, it's got to start with you guys, your relationship. It starts first with you in your heart. Like I'm saying, some people don't have a spouse. Some people don't have a spouse who's even in the same line of thinking. But if you are married and you're saying, yes, we want to do this to honor God, it has to first start with you and then affect your marriage. And then now you can properly or most effectively affect your children in that way. So just, if you don't know what God says about marriage and how the order should be, I even challenge you guys to really look into that and know what we're called to be as wives and husbands, because it's a beautiful picture of Christ's marriage to the church. And that's what we want our kids to love the church and love the Lord and not have a bad example in our homes.
Yeah, as we were putting this together, we're like, wow, there's just so much stuff that we can't get at, you know, because only 2 days. And the marriage thing is huge. So I'd highly recommend that chapter in the book and just to examine, self-evaluate, you know, the marriage and how it reflects with the kids. So today, whereas yesterday was laying a lot of groundwork with the gospel, today we're going to get into some more practical examples, and we're going to look at one of the verses. I'd mentioned there's just two verses in all the New Testament that are direct commands of how we should parent or how we should deal with our kids, and we're going to look at one of those today in talking about molding godly character. But before that, we've got another video that we'll start off with.
Four kids.
Not this one.
Bedtime is a crisis. That's why I'm here right now. It's too hard. They act like they've never been to sleep before. Bed? What's that? No, I don't want to do that. fork.
All right. We'll try that again.
Four kids.
I guess it won't play.
Bedtime is a crisis. That's why I'm here right now.
Let's try this a third time.
We couldn't do the marriage conference without having Paul Tripp and his staff.
Is it working?
I mean, the parenting.
Get this. This is the big deal, the point of focus.
Not this one.
This period of time. You
must the other video.
Tell this child in a hundred ways.
The video that's on Pro Presenter.
World of authority.
Remember I said I had one video first and then that one? Yeah, like back then. Me and Steven are real good friends. Thanks, Steven.
Four kids. Bedtime is a crisis. That's why I'm here right now. It's too hard. They act like they've never been to sleep before. Bed? What's that? No, I don't want to do that. Then it becomes some hostage negotiation, but in reverse. Look, if you stay in there, I will give you whatever you want. I will meet your demands. What do you want, a helicopter to Cuba? Anything. Just stay in there. There's always one awake. Like they're taking shifts. All right, I'll annoy him from midnight to 2. Who wants 3 to 6? Now let's lie down and practice kicking him in our sleep. Because my wife has instituted this open door policy where if one of our kids has a nightmare, they're welcome to come in our room and pee in our bed. Luckily, that only happens every night. You ever slept next to someone that's wet the bed? Delicious. You're asleep, right? So when you wake up, your first thought is, oh my God, I wet the bed! Then your next thought is, it's not that wet. I'll just scoot over a little bit. If I pretend to be asleep, maybe she'll deal with it. Oh, I didn't even notice that. Hey, while you're up, can you make me a sandwich? Thanks, honey.
All right, so we all know we go through stuff like that. It's not that far off. And one of the reasons I chose that clip is because it gets into some of the things that we're going to talk about today is discipline, boundaries, how much we actually allow this stuff to go on, and how much maybe room we allow our kids to have versus our authority. So let's read. We're going to read and start in Ephesians chapter 6. And today is going to be about molding godly character. And we will get to the other video, Stephen, sorry. So Ephesians 6, 1 through 4. It says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So as I mentioned yesterday, there's two verses that give direct instruction to us as parents of how we should be parenting. And this is one of them where it says that fathers shouldn't provoke their children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. So today we're going to do one session on discipline and one session on instruction in the Lord. And before we get into the discipline section, I just wanted to point out, and Paul Tripp actually does a great job of this, maybe Ted Tripp, I don't know. One of the two. In Shepherding a Child's Heart, that one thing that we try to instill in our kids and is really important for kids to grasp, and I think they can at a young age, is that this verse is a promise to them. And the promise to them, the reward to them, is that if they honor their father and mother, it will go well with them. And I believe it's Ted says that this keeps the child in God's circle of blessing. So when they're honoring their father, when they're honoring their mother, in this example it says through obedience, that they're in a place to receive God's blessing. And so we teach our kids and tell our kids, you know, when you obey mom and dad, you're actually obeying God. And when you obey God, you receive blessing from the Lord. He's a rewarder. He's someone that blesses those that honor him. And so we're teaching very, very openly with our kids, even as we discipline, even as we train, that we want to see them blessed by God. We want them to be in a place where they're not receiving constant discipline, but ultimately receiving reward. So that's the backdrop for this. So now training through discipline. As we talked about yesterday, God has all authority, and he's delegated authority to parents. And we're going to have a video by Paul Tripp in a little bit here. And we are to exercise this authority in order to love and to serve our kids. And that's what we talked about yesterday. But now, based on the gospel, we know that our kids have sin-filled hearts, just like we have. We're sinful from birth. And so if we leave our kids alone just to go do whatever they're going to do, they're going to head off in the wrong direction. And if you have children here, I'm sure you can think of that first realization when they're probably like months old, where you're like, wow, you know, I didn't teach them that. And some worldly teaching is to say, well, they'll only sin or they'll only do such and such if they're taught. So if you don't teach them bad things, they won't do it. And that is not the case. Children are sinful from birth. And so since kids will head in that direction, away from God's commands and in God's blessing, one of the things we need to be doing is disciplining them in order to bring them back into the circle of God's blessing. And so we're going to talk about discipline. One thing I wanted to point out right off the bat is discipline is not the opposite of love. I was once told very strongly, you know, as if love and discipline was in this balance, you know, that, you know, your kids don't need discipline, they need love. And so it's like we're weighing these two things of, okay, now we're going to discipline, now we're going to love. In actuality, if you're disciplining your kids in a biblical way, discipline is an act of love. So God, with us, disciplines us. This is Revelation 3:19. This is God speaking, those whom I love, I rebuke and discipline. And if you think about it, if we are geared towards sin nature and geared towards going the wrong direction, if my kid was heading in the wrong direction, and we'll use a physical example of when they get older and they're headed towards taking drugs or whatever else, if I didn't stop them and correct them and steer them back in the right path of blessing, that would be an unloving thing. You know, we understand that. Well, how much more when our kids are going to stand before the creator of the universe and give an account for everything they've done according to his standard, would we be essentially letting them down if we're not disciplining them and teaching them that there's reward for good behavior, obedience, and there's discipline for the opposite. Does that make sense? All right. I want to read another verse out of Hebrews. And this again is relating how God treats us, and I'm hoping that we're getting a picture that God's treating of us, how he treats us, how he loves us, is not a pandering love. James McDonald likes to say that God's love is not a love that says, hey, Johnny, you want another cupcake? You know, have 100 cupcakes, and always panders them and gives them what they want. But God's love is a disciplining love, a loving God for the long term. So it says in Hebrews 12:5-11, and have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline, in which all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. Think about this. If you are a son of God, and you are not being disciplined, you are not being corrected, you are not, God is not molding your character, it actually shows that you're not a son of God. That's what God does. He cares for us. He leads us to be more like Jesus Christ. And in this context, it's talking about trials, that we go through trials to teach us, to train us to be more godly. And then it goes on. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time as it seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share his holiness. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. So the writer of Hebrews is using fatherly discipline as an example and then teaching how God is. But we can also reverse it and look at it the other way too, of saying, as a father, reflecting God's fatherhood for my kids, that I am to discipline them to share in God's holiness. And this last verse is a promise that the discipline seems painful at a time. And I even tell my kids, you know, when they're like, well, your spankings hurt. Well, yeah, that's the point. It's not a coddling, you know, we'll hug afterward. It's meant to hurt. To teach you that there's repercussions. There's repercussions for sin. And then the promise is, but this discipline yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. That there's a goal at the end of the tunnel. It's not just to have, a peaceful night at home, but that our kids would be trained in righteousness and have the fruit of righteousness and live a life in righteousness. So that's the backdrop, that discipline is a loving act. It's teaching our kids, training our kids in love. So the next thing we're going to talk about is authority, and we're going to play a video by Paul Tripp. Stephen, you want to throw that on there? And you might have to cut the lights to see it. Oh, did it go back to nothing? There we go.
That they will never rule. That they are never in charge. That this universe that they're born into is a universe under rule. And because it's under rule, there is right and wrong. There is true and false. There is good and bad. There is healthy and unhealthy. Because there's a God of wisdom who rules his world. And they must understand that God uses human agents as expressions of his authority. We'll talk about this some more, but parents, you don't have independent authority. You have none. These children don't actually belong to you. They belong to God. Your authority is representative. You represent God's authority. And so in these early days, your job is to picture in the way that you respond to your authority, the kind of authority that God has. You're supposed to picture God's expression of authority. Ask yourself right now, is the way I respond to my children a beautiful picture of God's authority? Because that's critical, because everything that you will do in the mid-years and in the teen years is based on this child's understanding and willingness to submit to authority, right? Hear what I'm about to say. You do not want to have authority battles with a 17-year-old. Those battles are meant to be solved at this early age. And so parents,
You shouldn't give away authority at this early age, saying it's just a little thing. Have the battles when they're little, so you don't need to have the battles when they're big. Now, I can tell you for sure, fasten your seatbelts. If you do that, you're going to be one exhausted parent. Because you're going to feel like every day is one big battle. Praise Jesus, you're doing your job. I'm serious. Because you're teaching this child that submission to God's law, submission to God's authority is not bondage, it's actually freedom. Because I'm living according to the laws of the universe, and when I do this, life works the way it's supposed to work. If you got a Bible with you, and I hope you do, if you don't, you probably memorized yours.
If you want to stop that.
Turn to this beautiful passage of Scripture.
So
Ephesians 6,
just based on that backdrop, we'll let him stop. Thanks, Paul. Based on that background, the idea is that there's authority in the universe, like you said, and God has delegated that authority. And we're training and teaching and beginning to instill in our kids that there's blessings for obedience and curses for disobedience. And as that grows in their heart, not right away, so he's talking about the 0 to 5 year old age group right there. At a 3 and 4 year old, they're probably not making the connection to God. But as they're 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, all of a sudden 12, and you've instilled this foundation of teaching that, they begin to understand that and connect the dots that ultimately someday they will stand before God and give an account. And even as they live their life, God is a rewarder for those that obey him and trust him. So here's one practical example that we've seen in our kids' lives that we've been able to teach our kids. So from a very young age, we've disciplined our children, and we're going to get into how we've done that. But and at different times, we've had different seasons where we'd have to do more and we've had to do less. But as they've gotten older, my parents have watched our kids, and sometimes for long weekends and so forth. And just a couple months ago, my mom pulled. We were on a walk, and we were talking about something, and she said, you know, if your kids weren't well-behaved or listened to us, we probably wouldn't take them over the weekend. And this is nothing to say, oh, well, we've done an awesome job. But this is to point out that if you discipline your children and they start to obey authority, they reap the benefits of falling into that lifestyle at a very, very early age. So my son, for instance, my oldest son, he loves his grandma. He loves spending time with her. And so he gets to go with her for 2-3 days at a time sometimes. And he's already receiving the benefit of being in a household where he's to respect and obey authority at a very young age. And this doesn't just stop there. Now your kid's 12, 13, 14 years old. They get a job. They're obedient to their employer. They go to school, and they're obedient to their teachers. And this starts at a very, very young age. You know, it starts with the parents. It starts with us training our children to respect and obey authority. And ultimately, again, all of our kids will stand before the ultimate authority, God. So I'm going to hand it over to Jackie, and she's going to talk about boundaries.
Like he was saying, authority starts when our kids are little, when we're establishing authority in our homes. And one way we can do that is by not letting our kids do whatever they want to or think that they can't learn when they're little. And just some examples of things that you can start to do by teaching that you need to listen to mom, you need to listen to dad when we tell you something, is when you think of like a little kid when they start crawling and they start to get into things, and you have the kid crawl over to the bookshelf or the DVD rack and they just pull everything off. And
all our kids have done this, by the way.
Yes. So this is, I could even look at that. I can look at the situation and say, you know what, this is one area where I'm going to begin to teach them when mom says no, We don't touch the books or the CDs. That we're not going to do that. You know, I'm going to begin to establish my authority in my home. My mom tells me no, not to do it, then I'm not. So this is usually how this goes. I could either decide to, like, well, I'm just going to put all this away because I don't want to have to do this every day, or I can start to teach my child, okay, here's all these books, and I can go over to that kid as they start taking them off, and I can start to teach them, no, no, give them a spanking on their hand and say, don't touch the books, leave them on the shelf. And believe me, it usually doesn't just take one time. But I have taught all my kids not to do that by being consistent and teaching them, if you do what mom says not to, there's going to be a consequence. And we can teach our kids learn, just like I was talking about yesterday when you're changing a diaper, and you begin to teach them, you lay still, you're giving them a boundary, you're saying, don't go beyond it because mom's asking you not to, and it's going to be for your good, you know, and then you can teach your kid to lay still. So there's many ways we can set boundaries in our home. We can teach our kids boundaries so that they're respectful to other people, in the sense, like, we don't just, like at my house, we don't just go into the refrigerator and take food out whenever we want, or go into a cupboard and grab food. You need to ask first. If you take food before asking, there will be discipline because I've asked you not to do that. So setting boundaries for your kids when they're little are so important, like he's saying, to establish. Not that we want to be a dictator and, you know, like, you listen to your mother. You know, it's not about that. It's teaching your kids to respect authority, that when I'm asking you, Kevin, you like that? anyways, so it's just teaching our kids, like, what mom and dad are saying, I'm not doing this to take things away from you, I'm doing it for your good. And that's what he's talking about. There's a lot of ways we can establish boundaries in our home starting when they're little. And I think that example, you can kind of apply that to so many different things. When our kids are, you know, start to be able to make decisions on their own, you have to begin to steer them. Like, no, we don't go by the stairs. You know, we don't do this. We, you know, and then expect them to obey. Some kids are really stubborn. Some kids, if you give them a couple discipline sessions over it, they're done. Some kids, you can see there's some kids who are going to fight authority more than others. And those are the kids all the more that it's so, so, so important to be consistent when they're little. And that's what he's talking about. You don't want to fight those battles when those kids are in their teen years, because it's just not going to go well. You know, you want to establish those things when your kids are little, that, okay, my mom hasn't done things or my dad doesn't do things to make life difficult for me. They're just helping me along the way, you know?
Yeah, and just to remind you guys of where we're getting this is that, so, for instance, let's say, take example of the DVD off the rack. There is no Bible verse that says, thou shalt not have little kid take DVD off rack. That doesn't exist. And so, but there is that children should obey their parents, and parents should teach and train their children. So by giving them boundaries, in a way, you're teaching them what's right, and now this is something that they have to obey. This is something they have to obey if they're going to be honoring God. And then when they get older, it moves on to different things. You know, for instance, you know, with our kids now, that are older, you know, there's just so many things of, you know, you can do this for an hour and then you have to turn it off, you know, and then, so then it's their obligation to either do that or not do that, to listen or to not listen, to obey or disobey. But it starts at a very, very young age and then builds into something. Because if you start, let's say when you're 6, 7, 8, 9, all of a sudden the kids are going to be like, what? This was not a rule before. You know, what's the problem here? And it's not bad. There is no verse that says you can't do that. But hasn't been the habit of obeying the parent. Does that make sense? So start early. Start early setting boundaries and steering your kids towards godly living. One other thing that I wanted to mention about that is this also directly affects them at an early age of how God channels blessing into their life. So for an example, the DVD example. So let's say your kid's tearing DVDs out at your house and and we've had this at our house, and all of a sudden you go over to somebody else's house. If you are a blessing, if you're teaching them in your home to be a blessing to you, they are a blessing to other people. You know, it's amazing when somebody comes over to their house and all of a sudden their kids are cleaning up. It's like, wow, they've been taught, they've been trained, and now they're a blessing to me, and I'm more apt to be a blessing to them, you know. For instance, you know, when you guys have people over at your house or whoever else, you're probably not going to be like, okay, let's find the kids that are just going to tear up our house the most, you know. It's not going to work like that. And so your kids are going to miss out, in essence, if we're not laying that foundation of godly living. So now let's get to the rod. Want to talk about the rod? So biblically, this is the term, the rod. The rod of discipline, that's how it talks about it in Proverbs. And so that's how we're going to talk about it. We're not going to shy away from the term, the rod. The rod of discipline. And I want to give you guys some verses because obviously we all know culture nowadays that spanking is on the way out. In some countries, it's even outlawed. It's not illegal in the United States to spank your children. It is illegal to abuse your children. We're not talking about that at all. And we'll get into some practical examples of how we do this. Hopefully you'll see that this isn't abuse. But the rod is talked about in Proverbs, and it is essentially modern-day spanking of disciplining your children, causing physical pain in order to teach them that disobedience is bad, it's wrong, it's immoral. And then when they don't get spankings, it's a blessing. You know, that's why I tell my kids, you haven't been spanked today? That's a blessing. I'm blessing you. So let's look at some of these verses. And these are so important just to read, because culture is telling you guys, don't spank your kids. Don't discipline your kids. Be their best friend. And that's not what we find in the Bible. So just a couple. Proverbs 13:24. Whoever spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is diligent to discipline him. So this gets into the love aspect. Just flat up. This is what the Bible teaches. No pulling punches. If you hate your child, don't discipline them. If you love your child, be diligent to discipline them. Second one, Proverbs 22:15. Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline drives it far from him. Again, talking about this, that we're born with this heart that wants to go in the wrong direction, and it's bound up in our children. And the rod, in a practical way, gives us this image of if we're consistent in discipline, it drives those sinful behaviors out of their life. A couple other ones, Proverbs 23:13-14. Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you strike him with a rod, he will not die. If you strike him with the rod, you will save his soul from Sheol, or in other versions, death. And I've gotten conversations with people that say, well, the rod is just, you know, it's metaphorical for, you know, all these different things. And I don't know what other things you could strike a kid with. I don't know. But it lends me to think that a rod is a rod. It's discipline. It's spanking. It's causing physical pain to correct behavior they shouldn't be doing. And then the last one, Proverbs 29:15. The rod and reproof give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. So mothers, you don't want to be shamed. So the rod actually doesn't just teach our children what behavior to avoid, but it gives wisdom. It helps them in the way of wisdom. So I'm gonna read a few things from the Paul Tripp book when Jackie grabs it from me. But here's some objections to disciplining, spanking, that you're gonna hear. It doesn't work. Have you ever heard that one? Spanking doesn't work. And part of that is we have to discipline our children in faith. We have to discipline our children relying on these promises. And so once we get in the habit of disciplining, and we're saying, wow, there's just nothing happening. I know some of you guys in here have some really stubborn kids, and you're like, man, what do we do? It's not working. These are things that God's placed in the universe, just like what goes up must come down. This is what God's saying. Discipline your children, and eventually it'll bear fruit. It'll bear fruit in their lives. And so we do it in faith. We do it consistently. Why don't you talk about the disciplining for disobedience, and I'll find those objections.
Disciplining, when we're choosing to look at something our kid do and decide if they need discipline, we need to make sure that we are disciplining for disobedience and not a mistake. And I always think of the example, and I know I think Paul Tripp was talking about that. Like, if one of my kids are at the breakfast table and they accidentally bump their cereal bowl over, even though that's upsetting because you have to clean up a mess, and you know, that's not something that would merit a spanking. It was an accident and they spilled something, because we don't want our kids to ever, like, if they make a mistake and do something, you don't discipline them. Kids are going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes. But if, let's say that kid, you told that child who's getting cereal bowl and saying, you don't pour your own milk, you wait for mommy to help you, and then they poured their milk and spilt it all over, that would merit discipline, because you've specifically told them, don't pour your own milk, and now you made a mess. So then you might have to send your child away and say, I'm going to be in to discipline you in a minute while I clean up the milk. But you know what I'm saying? So make sure when we're disciplining our kids, it isn't for mistakes. It's for direct disobedience. If it's something that God has said or something that you've told them specifically, then it merits. Because we don't want to just be this strong hand against our kids where they don't, it'll just be confusing to them. Like, what, you know? And just because something upsets you doesn't mean it merits discipline. And it's just really good to check in your heart, or stop and think before you're going to react to something, and then decide, was that disobedience or was it just a mistake? And I think we have to be really careful of that, because we don't want to be mean parents. We want to be loving parents.
So here's some objections that Ted Tripp addresses that I just wanted to touch on. So here's one. I love my children too much to spank them. And he just says, this objection is easy to understand. I know of nothing harder than spanking my children. It's difficult to hold your own child over your knee and be the cause of his discomfort. And that's so true. We don't enjoy, I tell my kids, I don't like this. You know, I'm not excited about disciplining you. But here's the thing, if I love you, I need to train you. I need to teach you. I need to steer this behavior. Second one, I'm afraid I will hurt him. And he points out the truth that as parents, we can automatically associate that if we cause physical pain to our children, that's bad. That's hurtful to the relationship. But Proverbs 23:13-14 says, if you punish him with the rod, he will not die. And so this is actually the opposite correlation, that if you discipline them, if you give them temporary physical pain, in the long run, they won't have eternal death. The next one is, I'm afraid it will make them rebellious and angry. And he points out that in Proverbs 29:17, it says, discipline your son, and he will give you peace. He will bring delight to your soul. So again, this is trusting on the biblical promise versus our own maybe intellect of thinking, if I discipline, it's going to sever our relationship. It's actually going to bring peace to the relationship by creating authority and obedience. The next one, I'm afraid of teaching them to hit. And I'm actually going to touch on this a little bit, of talking about how we practically do this. And then the last one, it doesn't work. And he gives four reasons. One is spanking out of anger, which we should never do, being inconsistent, failure to persist, and failure to be effective, meaning to make it hurt. So he gives those things as objections. Now, I want to talk about the practicality of how we do this. So practically how we do this. When our kids are very young, Jackie had mentioned, we start by doing this by doing hand spankings. So, for instance, is that even a term, hand spanking? So, for instance, let's say they're going for the DVDs, they're going for whatever, and you're teaching them not, you're changing the diaper and they're trying to grab their poop. We don't want them to do that. We simply say, no, don't do that. If they keep doing that, grabbing their hand and giving them a spanking on their hand, enough to feel it, pain. And they're associating disobedience causes pain. Disobedience causes pain. And a lot of times, like Jackie mentioned, have to do that over and over and over again, and all of a sudden, they will understand, I'm not doing that, I'm not being disciplined. And then as they get older, maybe a year and a half, 2 years, you're going to have to use some wisdom on this. We start actually physically spanking, usually in diapers by then. And so we're spanking on the upper leg. Not very hard, just enough to give them physical pain. As they get older, one thing that, and we get to this stage, we're always wanting to take them into another room. So we're not shaming them in front of their brothers and sisters. We're not shaming them in front of guests. We're taking them to a place where they understand that they're going to be disciplined for something they did, and it's going to be between the parent and them. So oftentimes, even at a young age, especially with our older ones, I would just say, okay, now go in the bathroom. And they knew what that meant. And so they would go in the bathroom before I would, and they'd sit in there and wait for me. And if they were throwing a fit in there, they'd get more spankings than if they didn't. And so they'd wait in there. I would go in there, and I'd tell them, you know, you need to obey me. You know, this is what God asked you to do. That's how you're blessed, is if you obey. They understand that I'm an authority. And I tell them, okay, now I'm going to give you such and such spankings. So whether it's one or two, I've always gotten in the habit of saying, this is how many you're going to get. Unless they go to block, okay? Block adds spankings, okay? And you got to institute that rule. You don't want any blocking going on. So like with our young kids, if they're in diapers, you know, I pull down their pants other than their diaper and give them a spanking on the upper thigh. And as they got older, the spankings would get harder. As they got out of diapers, then it would go into the bottom, and not the fleshy part. Very practically, all we're trying to do is saying this act of disobedience causes physical pain. Now, once the spanking's done, and they're done probably crying, one thing that I think it's important to do is have the child get to a place where they're calmed down. So you're not spanking them, they're freaking out, and you're just like, okay, I'm out of here. You know, deal with your life. So they're calming down, and then you're having just a brief conversation. Sometimes it's very, very short, just where they're calmed down, and you say, you know, I love you. Give them a hug. I think it's always important to end with a hug. As our kids have gotten older and the spankings have gotten rare, the hug sometimes is harder to come by, you know, because they're just stubborn. But very important to end with that issue resolved. Meaning, as a parent, I'm not carrying anything on to the rest of the day. As the child, they know you're not carrying anything on to the rest of the day. That act of disobedience was dealt with. So we can go on with the day. We're reconciled. All these guys talk about in disciplining the importance of reconciliation. And we're saying, and I even say this a lot of times to my kid, the rest of the day, there doesn't have to be any more discipline. This can be a great day. This is done. I'm not mad. We're putting this behind us. Now let's go out and just do whatever we're going to do. Did you want to add anything to that? Now, obviously, as kids get older, this changes a little bit in how you discipline. So our 11 and 10-year-olds get very few spankings. It probably goes right down the line of who gets the most by age. And so as they get older, then you're going to start making different appeals to their conscience when they disobey. You know, talking about, okay, now you're disobeying, and they can start making that connection. Now you're disobeying God. You know, do you want to be in this place where you're actively disobeying God? And sometimes they'll repent and say, no, I don't want to, you know, and I'll suggest, okay, ask God to forgive you. They do, on rare occasion, get spankings at that age. They've had to get harder just to make it hurt. But our ultimate goal is that eventually, as the kid gets older, they move out of the physical pain discipline into an area where they can start to understand and realize and have a comprehension for sin, the result of sin, and then they're making acts of confession, repentance, as they get older. It doesn't always work perfect, but so important to start young and then continue this pattern of there's authority, there's obedience, there's blessing if you obey. As a parent, I don't love to discipline, but I will do it because it's my responsibility, and it's to teach and train you to live in the way that God's asked you to live. Any questions about that specifically? We had one question yesterday. Somebody asked, well, what happens if you discipline them and you tell them to do something, and then they do it, and they get like this steel resolve, like, I will not give in. And the truth of it is, in that situation, they're trying to buck authority. They're trying to say, no, it's my way. I don't care. I got it. I was disciplined, but I don't care. It's going to be my way today. And so my encouragement always is, stay the course. If you give a spanking, and the kid's 4 years old, and they're still doing the exact same thing, tell them, okay, if you continue to do this, you're going to get another spanking, like, in 3 seconds. And if they do it again, you spank again. And you stay the course until you break them in that place. Because ultimately, with God, they're not going to be able to persist in sin and get the upper hand. And so we don't want to teach that with our kids. Now, this can get hairy, I would say, because some kids are incredibly stubborn, and they will keep persisting. And so you're going to have to use judgment, and I have never had a kid as stubborn as I've seen other kids. I've seen some kids honestly get spanked probably like 15 times in a row, where it, not just like 15 spankings, but like, spankings, okay, opportunity for repentance, no, spanking, and on and on and on. And I can say, in that particular example, the child that was disciplined, I would say, is probably one of the most remarkable young ladies, you ladies, that I know. She's amazing as far as her obedience and her honoring her father and mother, but it wasn't without a ton of hard work. A ton of hard work. And I could see where there would be a point where a parent would say, you know what, out of maybe pent-up anger and frustration of how this is going, I just need to stop right now. I need to stop right now and just let this lay low and figure out some other way to discipline the child. So hopefully that's helpful. I know that a lot of these situations aren't just as cut and dry as some of these rules we put in place. Does that make sense? Any questions regarding discipline? Yep. Right now, I would say probably you give more, I would say.
I think when, just because I'm with my kids all day, I can't just wait for Shane to be around. So I typically probably am disciplining, especially our little ones, way more than Shane, because it's kind of a continual thing all day, and I'm there. You know, and if I would always be like, well, wait till your dad gets home, they would never respect my authority. And that's why I think it's important, too, that, you know, obviously God has established, you know, a godly order in our homes. God you know, the father, you know, and then, it keeps going, like, as leadership. But in it, too, we, like, as moms, sometimes I think we have to be willing to know that God has called us as a parent to step up in these places and not ultimately discipline, and Shane's going to be held accountable for, you know, the family in that area, too. But, I mean, that we are doing our part in disciplining and not being lazy or, you know, over-emotional about it and just looking at it the way God is. So, yeah, I typically probably when they're little do more of the during the day. If Shane's
yeah,
home,
if we're both there, then it's usually me. Yeah. So if we're both in and sometimes, you know, fathers don't always see, you know, quite as well as the mom. So sometimes Jackie will be like, okay, this kid needs discipline, you know, and then I'll be like, oh okay. So then I have to find out what was going on to realize why I'm spanking, and then I'd, you know, do the spanking. It's not always like that, okay? But sometimes it is. Any other questions? I still am, but normally they're not, like, so with little kids, kind of got, I got in some form, you know, you have that form where you, like, tuck the legs, you know, bend over, you know. So older kids, you obviously don't do that, you know, so they're getting older, you don't want to treat them like they're 3 years old, but, so usually, yeah, I do have them, you know, pull their pants down and spank them, but spankings are very few and far between. So oftentimes it's like, you know, I'm really appealing to the conscience, you know, really making strong appeals to the conscience, like, hey, you know, this is going on with your brother, like, let's really make an effort here to change your behavior. And if that persists, it's like, you've given me no choice, you know, I have to discipline you physically. Even though, and some of what I do as they get older is I tell them, so my 11 and 10-year-old is, you know, if you're going to act like you're 5, you're going to be disciplined like you're 5. You know, and if as an 11-year-old, if you can learn to repent and change your behavior without physical discipline, then that's what I'd prefer. But if you're not going to, then my hand is going to be forced, so to speak. Yeah.
At about what time did you see that character building or appealing to their conscience? When did you start to implement that?
I would say we started to implement it pretty early, meaning, you know, when they can understand that they can change their behavior. You know, so I don't know exact age, but like Eden's 4 right now. And I would say we even start to do some of that with her, but not nearly as much as, you know, as they get older.
And is that look like instead of saying don't touch the DVDs and then if they touch them you give them a spanking, is that first warning appealing to their conscience, or are you still giving a warning appealing to the conscience and then spanking?
Yeah. So as far as like the order of that, I don't have a great answer of what that looks like. I would say that every disobedience is disobedience, if that makes sense. Meaning, like, let's say a kid touches a DVD and you told them not to. Sometimes we can be like, oh, that's not a big deal. You know, they touched a DVD, who cares? You know, it's not like hitting their brother. But it really has no difference. You know, disobedience is disobedience. And so it's important to be on the front end of that, of saying, you know, we're going to deal with this early on. So whether it's, I told you, you didn't do it, okay, spanking, or whether it's, you know, no, I told you not to do that, you know, you're kind of giving them another warning. I know I've said it, but I try not to get in the habit of saying, even, you know, like when they're doing something, you're like, well, if you do that again, you know, because basically you're saying, okay, now every time there's a warning, which we don't always want to say. You know, like counting down to 5 from 5, is just, it's a bad idea, in my opinion, because you're saying for 5 seconds you can disobey, and then they realize, okay, one, okay, I'll stop. And they get in that habit. So they're just testing there. They're trying to take as much authority over the parent as they can, which is teaching them to disobey. So hopefully that helps. It's not, I don't know, I don't have a specific answer on it because it sometimes varies depending on the kid, the age, you know, what type of habits they've been into. You know, we have one son who it seems like he doesn't hear all the well. You know, there could be a situation where he disobeys and I could spank him and then ask him, okay, what did you get a spanking for? I don't know. I have no idea. And so I don't know how effective that would be to teach him to obey. So in that case, we're probably giving him a few more warnings than the other kids, just to make sure he's, like, understanding what he's hearing. So.
Well, and I think, too, as your kids get older, you're going to start to see little bits of fruit. Like, even when they're little, that they start to recognize, like, I've even had, you know, my boys, they'll do something and then I'll see them go, oh, I'm sorry, Mom, I shouldn't have did that, or I shouldn't have said that. You start to see them beginning to take responsibility for their actions. Like, even my son now, as he's older, will talk some, like, sassy or disrespectful to me, and he'll catch it himself and be like, I'm sorry, Mom, I should not have said that like that. So right there, I'm not going to take him and spank him. I'm going to say, okay, thank you for, you know, like, you just begin to start to see, you hope, some kids takes a long time, but there's going to be fruit that starts to come from your kids where even when they're little, they can start to recognize, you know, like, okay, this was not right. This is, you know, and in some kids, unfortunately, with boys, I think, you know, they don't, it takes probably, they don't move out of that stage, especially watching some of my friends. I can use the example where maybe their girls kind of mature a little bit faster than the boys. So I think boys typically just need to be spanked more longer. It just happens. Unless there's some really mature boy, which can happen. I'm not saying all boys are immature. Just most of them. No. But girls do typically mature faster. So I think in girls, you will see kids move out of the needing spankings more, you know, I mean, at an earlier age.
And then also as our kids get older, like with our older ones, we're having to come up with different ways of disciplining. So then it changes from the physical discipline to something else. You know, so our oldest son loves the video games. So, you know, it'll be like, you know, you're not playing iPod for a whole week, you know, and then he's trying to figure out when the weekend's, you know, is it Friday, is it Saturday? So we're getting into some of those, you know, different things we're having to do. There's been some lessons we've learned, and we kind of wanted to go over some of these just to dive into some specifics, maybe questions that you've had or will have. So the first one is little disobedience is disobedience. And I don't know if you wanted to give that example.
I was just thinking when we went over this, when your kids are little and they are walking and you say, like, come here, like if I was calling Eden when she was little, like, come here, Eden. And she walks away and goes the other way. And some people think it's funny, you know, like, or you have to chase after that kid. But it just, even there, it's like, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but you can start establishing, like, that was, you disobeyed. I asked you to come here and you went the other way. So then we can establish that's, even in the boundary sense, no, when Mom calls you, I want you to come the first time. And Eden, the summer, we have neighbors and our yards are adjoined, and she was playing with the neighbors, and she is the only one in our house who has to come in for nap, so that was a really hard thing for her. She didn't want to stop playing and come in for nap, but she needs a nap. So I would say, no, you can go outside, but when Mommy calls you in for a nap, you need to come in right away. And she'd be like, okay, Mom, okay, you know. Well, when it came to nap time and I would come on the deck and I would say, Eden, you need to come in the house now, her first reaction in the beginning was, no! I don't want a nap. Well, so I didn't say anything else. I walked down the deck. I went over to her. I took her hand. I brought her in the house, and I had to teach her, when Mom calls you, I want you to come in the house right away, and you do not throw a fit. And I gave her a spanking, put her to bed, and I said, tomorrow. So this took pretty many days. But she eventually learned I could start to see where she would want to listen and then run away or want to. And then eventually I saw her make the decision to, in her mind, okay, it's not going to go well if I don't come in. I would see her just kind of like throw down the toys and then come in the house, just kind of, but she decided to listen. So little disobedience, you take care of. Don't just look at it lightly, because then it establishes something and then you're teaching them through that.
Yeah, the second one then is disciplining too late can lead to anger. So one of the things I didn't talk about with the practicality is we should never, ever discipline out of anger. You know, we should get our place. You know, if you need to cool down, you cool down. You do it out of the view of the kid, and then you come in understanding your mind's there. You're understanding what's going to happen. You're disciplining for disobedience. What I find is that if I let things go on, maybe disobedience go on too long, and I find myself getting frustrated, it happens almost in correlation with how long I allow disobedience to go on. So if I allow something to go on, all of a sudden I'm upset about it. And what can prevent that is seeing and understanding our kids are disobeying and jumping on it right away. All of a sudden there's no anger. It was dealt with. We were reconciled after discipline. And there's no growing frustration, no growing anger. The day's going smoother. The worst thing you want to do is get to the end of the day and be like, man, the kids were terrible. The kids were horrible today. And a lot of times it's like, well, did we attempt to discipline them all? Oh, yeah, we didn't. Well, I guess that's my fault then. And I'm frustrated. I'm angry. The kid's out of control, all because we didn't step up and discipline early on. The third one is disciplining too often can crush a child's spirit. And so in this regard, you had mentioned, Casey, about, you know, how long and how often and warning and so forth. If we're too eager to discipline and maybe cracking down, and I would say, honestly, not many people fall in this category, but some do, of being eager to discipline and keep our kids in line, it can crush a kid's spirit. So it says in Ephesians that fathers shouldn't exasperate their children. And exasperate their children, the best way I know of how that can happen is expecting too much of our kids, disciplining too quickly, where they feel like they're just under an iron fist. And so we don't ever want to get there with our kids. We want to discipline in love and always be trying to bless them. And so with that attitude, we don't want to be just ruling with an iron fist. The fourth one, my biggest failure inconsistency and love for my kids and discipline is laziness. And so, for instance, this is just an example. I work out of the home, the office, and so let's say I've been working, you know, long hours, whatever, and a kid's acting up, and so I'm supposed to be done with work, but maybe I just want to, you know, go on Facebook or read news or whatever else, you know, really harmless things. And all of a sudden, the kid's out of control, and I'm ticked off about it, but I'm not dealing with it because I want to do what I want to do. And so my laziness results in an inconsistency with our kids. And so this is one thing I just want to point out that I say I struggle with at times, and it's something that for us to be aware of. If things have disorder in the home, is it because we're just being lazy and not disciplining and working hard at it?